All right, Chris Raymond, kindly waiting on the phone line here for us to finally get to him. Chris is author of Men in White, the gutsy against all odds return of Penn State football. And, Chris, first of all, thanks for taking the time this morning. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, guys. I appreciate you giving me the chance to come back and talk.
Chris, let's, for those that don't know, we've had you on before, obviously, talking about the book, but give us a little more detail on the book, where folks can get it. It's still obviously available. And it really is a terrific story of Penn State football and how a bunch of guys that had nothing to do with the scandal that never should have been. That's another story for another day, but man, what those guys were able to do, and obviously kind of culminating with that 2016 Big Ten championship team, is truly remarkable.
Yeah, it is. It's a great story. It's about those guys that sort of stayed at Penn State to try and rescue the program in the aftermath of the Sandusky scandal. So it chronicles five seasons, sort of starting with the day the NCAA sanctions were handed down in 2012, and it looked like the whole program might implode. It ends with that amazing come-from-behind win in the 2016 Big Ten Championship. And it's an oral history, so the whole story is told through the words of the players themselves. And, yeah, it's available nationwide right now. So it's been out since August, and you can get it online or in any bookstore.
And, Chris, you actually reached out to me, and it's like, hey, man, you want to maybe talk about some of the interesting comparisons. And the more I've been thinking about it, obviously entirely different circumstances, but and for different reasons, but the pandemic, you know, hit Penn State football maybe a little harder than some, and I don't want to get into the weeds on why that may or may not have been, but certainly in the James Franklin era, those were a couple of very rough seasons. But I think coming out of it, again, arguably, this three-year run that Penn State is on right now, where they have not lost a game in which they were favored. And again, when you look around college football, there are not many programs this season for one year that can say that. It's really pretty special stuff. But I think when you look at the character of the kids that are involved here and what this team, you know, has an opportunity to do here Saturday night and then into the 12-team playoff. I mean, this really has a chance to be a legendary season in Penn State football.
Absolutely. I mean, you see sort of shades of that resiliency that 2016 team had. If you remember correctly, those guys started off at 2-2. And in Game 5, people were actually calling for James Franklin's head. They sort of came back to beat Michigan in that, and that's kind of what launched them. This team, you know, has only sort of lost one game, a disappointing game to Ohio State, but they have sort of shown that same resiliency. I think what was interesting to me was, you know, that 2016 team had a lot of offensive talent, but it wasn't until James Franklin hired Joe Moorhead as the offensive coordinator that they were able to unleash that talent, and I think you're seeing something very similar with Andy Kotelnicki. I do think that 2016 team, that offense in the second half at least was really explosive, you know, so they can kind of blow teams out. We haven't quite seen that yet, and that's one of the bigger question marks for me is this offense going to be able to explode when you need it to, you know, against Oregon State and I think in the playoffs as well.
Yeah, I think that is it's going to be one of the fascinating stories to follow is how this receiving core in particular steps up or, you know, perhaps doesn't in the postseason, starting with this Big Ten championship game. And, you know, certainly I think it helps tremendously if Trey Wallace, and it seems like he's going to go here in the Big Ten championship game and moving forward, and that's, you know, certainly a big helpful part of the equation here for Penn State, because Wallace is one of those guys that you feel like can be pretty dynamic if he gets the opportunity.
That's right, and I think you look at Nick Singleton, you know, who was hurt earlier in the season. It does feel like he's back at full stride right now, and that will certainly help as well.
Chris, when you look at the like kind of the leadership of that 2016 team and compare it with this team, I do think it's interesting because these are guys that, and obviously, I guess with any college football program now, with the transfer portal and NIL and all of this stuff, the guys that are on your team, they want to be here. Like, there's not a bunch of guys that, man, I'll just slog through this, I guess, because I have to. That isn't the case anymore. And so I do think it's significant that you have these guys and I'm thinking in particular of a guy like Nick Dawkins who was, you know, man, stuck around, put his time in, has been a leader even while not being a starter, and now has that opportunity this year to really emerge and help solidify that offensive line. It's just an example of the guys that really are providing a special kind of leadership, I think, on this team.
I agree. I do think you see some of that as well. You know, I think back to the USC game, you know, and those two fourth and one conversions, you know, the fact that you had players step up and make the plays when they needed to be played then. And that certainly was a hallmark of that, you know, that last Big Ten championship team. There's still a little bit of a question mark for me. You know, I think when you saw how well Trace McSorley played and could step up in those games, when you saw how well Saquon Barkley could, you know, I think you're seeing more of that from Drew Aller this year, but I haven't quite seen him be able to put the team on his back and really kind of lift it up in the same way. And that may be, you know, a result of, you know, Nick Singleton and Trey being hurt, you know?
Yeah. No, the storylines going into this Oregon game and then obviously into the playoffs, I do think are fascinating. And I think I'm with you. I think at the top of the list is, can this receiving core and this quarterback step up in the big moments and deliver? And, you know, we're going to all find out together here. I think it's an unknown right now.
That's right. And to be fair, that 2016 team, I think, was truly exceptional. You know, if you remember correctly, they went down 28-7 to Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship game.
Yep.
And it was the first time in my life that I was like, okay, you know, this isn't too bad.
Yeah.
We have the whole second half to go, you know. So it was not surprising that they were able to eliminate a 21-point lead. I certainly don't have that same confidence with this team, you know, that they could come back from 21 points. But, again, you know, everything changes in the playoffs and in the conference championships, so you don't really know.
Hey, Chris, Scott here. Thanks for joining us this morning. Now, let me see if I heard this right from you. You said, I'm pointing at Jeff.
Yep,
said that if Penn State wins this game Saturday night, they should be the number one seed.
That's right.
All right. Now, I was thinking about this, Chris. All right. Let's surmise a little bit. If this 12-team playoff had existed in 2016, all right, and Penn State,
yep,
again comes all the way back in that game against Wisconsin, wins the Big Ten championship, what would they have been seeded? Because, again, they didn't make the playoff that
year,
which aggravated all of us.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now, if the 12-team playoff had existed 8 years ago, Chris, what do you think, what seed would they have been? That team.
Right. I mean, I felt that team was deserving of one of those top four seeds. Obviously, you know, the playoff committee did not agree to that, but I have to think that they would have been, you know, somewhere between 5 and 7 in that game.
Well, I mean, if you're applying the rules that are in effect,
that's
for the 12 team playoff, they
go.
Would have been either 2 or 3 because Big Ten champions automatically a top four seed.
That's right. That's
so,
right.
Which is,
yeah,
also,
I certainly would have made them a 2. I mean, I can't imagine. You know, I thought that they deserved one of those, you know, number one seeds. So I can't imagine they would drop below a 2.
Yeah, that is an interesting. I have to go back. I'm going to try to do it while we're talking here and look at the overall. That's actually a really interesting talking point because I think as a Big Ten champion, they likely would have been the 2 seed. If again, you're translating the current format with the four conference champions or five conference champions being in and the top four being ranked one through four or seeded one through four. Obviously, it would have been no worse than fourth, but I they would have been either second or third.
I think second. Then how did they get screwed in 2016?
Well, huh? Thanks, Pitt.
Hello?
Pitt had a lot to do with
it's
it.
Like, come on. Now, that, Chris, the book.
Well, you see the same thing happening this year, I have to say, just with the, you know, with the SEC bias on things. You know, the bias in favor of Alabama and Georgia. That's amazing to me that you sort of expand this, you know, field by eight teams and we're still in the exact same arguments we were, you know, in 2016 when it was only four.
Yep.
Yeah, let's get Paul Feinbaum a one-way ticket to Ukraine. All right. Holy mackerel, that guy. Now, Chris, the book is great. And folks, go check out this book, Men in White. There is a pile of Q&A like interviews in the book. Think back, Chris. Saquon Barkley. Everybody knows Saquon Barkley. All right, boom.
Yep.
Trace McSorley. Everybody knows him. Okay. Your opinion, as long a list as you want to make. Who were some of the unsung heroes of that stretch of time? From 2012 to as far as you went in the book. I mean, guys that you interviewed and you don't, those names don't immediately come to mind, but it's like after you interviewed them, this guy was an unsung hero. Who were some of those guys?
I mean, I think on that team, you really have to look at the, at the walk-ons. Those were some of the first guys that I ended up talking to, but when you looked at like what they accomplished in that time, I mean, these guys were sort of called in and put on a field with, you know, Division I players, and I think some of those guys would not have been Division I. Some of them even admit that. So guys like Von Warner and Greg Garrity and Jesse Della Valle, those were the ones that kind of jumped out to me at first because they were there for that whole run, and they became really pivotal leadership, you know, role models in the later years, when in their junior and senior years. You know, I think Carl Nassib got all of the attention in his final year, but there's a guy that really sort of persevered. You know, he had a conversation with Bill O'Brien, you know, told him that he wanted to go play NFL football, and Bill O'Brien told him to get out of his office. No, that was not going to happen. So, you know, that's a guy that kind of stands out to me. Sam Ficken, you know, well, I guess he's, you know, he got the accolades later on, but there's another, like, a remarkable story when you look at the way his college career started off, right? Losing, you know, failing on four kickoff attempts, or four, you know, field goal attempts. You know, anybody else, certainly I would have kind of walked away at that point. I think most of us would have sort of given up at that point. And the fact that he kind of doubled down and became a terrific field goal kicker, it's one of my favorite stories in the book as well.
Yes. Ficken's perseverance and ability to, turn something that was obviously a disaster at the start into something truly memorable and, you know, even carved out an NFL career for himself is truly one of the more amazing stories on a team filled with amazing stories, I guess. But as you said, it was certainly a team that had a ton of talent, though, when you look back on it. And, you know, I think this team this year has a lot of talent, but I think there's some guys that, again, need to come up in clutch moments here for this team to be remembered or revered the way, you know, in particular that 2016 team is, or even for obviously very different reasons that 2012 team is.
Yes. And that, I think, is the X factor, you know, when you're talking about a national championship team or a Big Ten championship team. You know, it's one thing to have the talent, and there's no question that Penn State has that talent. It's another thing to have that, like, that grit and that perseverance and the ability to kind of step up in those big games. And I think the fact that those players in 2016, 2015, you know, saw a guy like Sam Ficken, knew where he started out at. They saw a player like Carl Nassib, knew where he started out at. You know, they were equals, I think, when they started out. They saw the troubles those guys went through. And then they saw how they were able to kind of step up with that sort of hard work that you put in the off season. And I think that was the big difference. You know, those guys talk about that, you know, Minnesota game being behind at halftime and going back in the second half. You know, they literally hear fans chanting for the head of their coach, you know. They're 2-2 at that point, looking at going to 2-3, and it ends up being like a little-known receiver named Irv Charles who, like, makes the big catch and the touchdown that kind of ignited that offense the rest of the way. And I think for those guys, they realized, like, anybody could step up. You know, when you had your moment, you needed to kind of step up and make the play. And that really is the difference right there. You can have all the talents in the world, but until you have guys that have that kind of heart and the ability to kind of step up and make the catch, make the tackle, make the block, you know, do those key things that win football games, you know, you end up not being a championship-caliber team. So we've seen some with that this year. I think I think you need to see it. You know, this game on Saturday is going to be decided by 3 or 4 plays, right? That's what everybody tells you.
Yeah.
You know? So you have to be ready when you're the player that needs to make one of those 3 or 4 plays.
Yeah, and you know, we've been talking, Chris. I don't know if you're looking at this particular game, the matchup with Oregon, the same way. But I think a couple of things is you know, Penn State is basically playing with house money here. This is not an opportunity they were expecting. I don't think anybody anywhere was expecting them to have this opportunity. Maybe outside of the Michigan locker room, and I even wonder. Truthfully,
yes.
If everybody in that room is like, oh, no, yeah, we're about to go out and beat Ohio State with the defections we have and all of the other issues. But regardless, and so it's a great opportunity, but I think it's one of those with very little risk associated with it. Again, I think it's pretty clear the loser of this game will be the number 5 seed, which means you get to be home against the 12 seed, and then in the quarterfinals, if you take care of business in that home game, you get an opportunity to play, you know, likely a Boise State or maybe, you know, possibly an Arizona State or an Iowa State type of team. And while certainly, again, no cakewalks with any of those, That is not exactly a daunting path to a Final Four appearance, which is, you know, what this program has been gunning for really since 2016.
That's right. Absolutely right. But I will point out that that's also, you know, my perspective. That's the perspective of a fan. You know, this game at the end of the day doesn't matter all that much. You're still going to be in the playoff. But I think if you're a player on a, you know, national championship team, you got to be looking at this and saying, this is our opportunity. Like, really, we beat Oregon. Nobody can question whether or not we belong in the playoff. And at the very top, you know, one
yeah.
of the top number one seeds, you know what I mean? And that's like seizing your moment there, taking full advantage of that opportunity. So I would hope that's the way they're thinking. This is a crucial game for us, and if we win it, we silence all those doubters.
Yeah, and I think they're looking at it, too, is just a chance. I mean, from the time they were walking off the field in that Ohio State loss, they've been talking about they want that opportunity to show, and whether it's against the Buckeyes or now against the Ducks, that, hey, we actually are a team that is good enough and can go out and beat anybody, but you need to go out and win. It's not good enough to, hey, man, we were a play or two away. You got to go out and do it. And I do think they're looking at this as a tremendous opportunity in that regard. And, yeah, I've got to believe that there is a different level of confidence once you actually go out and achieve something like that. Again, you may still have the inner belief that you can do it, but it's different when you've actually gone out and done it, and now it's like, well, I have that in my hip pocket. I now know we were the team that went out and beat the only undefeated team from the regular season, so what task in front of us in the playoffs is so daunting that we won't be able to complete it?
That's right. I was there, you know, as a student covering the team for the Daily Collegian back in, like, 1986 and 1987. I was there to cover that Orange Bowl game against Oklahoma when an undefeated Penn State team got rocked in that game. And I saw those players as they walked off the field, and that team really gelled in that moment. Those guys were determined to come back and win a national championship. You can kind of see that resolve. And didn't mean, you know, they didn't blow everybody out in the course of the regular season, when they got there and they played Miami in the Fiesta Bowl, and all there was all that hype around Miami, and everybody talking about those weapons that Miami had, Vinny Testaverde, you know, that team. Those guys just had, like, just that confidence that you just sort of referenced was huge. Yeah. You know, they had chips on their shoulders, and they were willing to kind of let everybody talk about Miami, but they were going to go out and prove that the people were wrong. Conventional wisdom was wrong.
Chris,
and again, that's just the heart of a ching.
Chris, you and I are both old because I remember those 2 years, 85 and 86.
Oh, yeah.
I've got one more question for you. Now, earlier we mentioned the transfer portal opens on Monday, and all over the country there's going to be guys jumping ship to some other team. Your research, off the top of your head, in 2012, the expectation was Penn State was going to lose dozens of guys because they were given the opportunity, you can go wherever you want. And Penn State was like flat on the floor. Poof.
Yep.
How many guys jumped ship? Do you, I mean, from your research and writing, how many guys can you recall?
From that 2012 team, I you know, I think there were only two of like that really sort of mattered, I think, to that team.
Yeah.
But I think there were only like five that ended up jumping ship at the end.
Yeah.
There might have been some guys that hadn't really seen playing time yet that I've, you know, names that you don't really remember. You know, but they lost Silas Redd. That was the big one, clearly. They lost Anthony Ferra, the kicker, and that's the reason that, you know, we ended up having, you know, missing four kicks in that game.
Yep.
Against Virginia. But Anthony Ferra went, you know, to back to Texas because his mom was sort of fighting, I think it was cancer.
Yes.
You know, so he wanted to be closer to home.
Yeah.
And they lost a linebacker, Forte, but there were, you know, some people saying that it mattered. There were other players that were telling that it didn't really matter too much. So I think it really came down to those two players. It was losing your field goal kicker and losing, you know, your Heisman Trophy potential running back in Silas Redd.
Yeah.
That's it. Chris, we sincerely appreciate the time this morning. Looking forward to seeing what Penn State can do here against Oregon on Saturday night and then on into the playoffs again. Thank you so much for the time this morning.
Yeah, guys, I really appreciate it.
And